Hello and welcome to Batflips and Nerds, the baseball podcast with a British twist. I am your host today, Ben Carter, bringing you a very exciting interview podcast. I'm delighted to be joined by a very special guest today. Give him a quick intro. He's a man of many talents, founding member of British indie rock band The Maccabees. More latterly, one of the founding members and hosts of the BBC's very popular, loosely cricket-based podcast, Tailenders. For any cricket fans listening who haven't given it a try, I can strongly recommend it. And now releasing a brand new book that I actually do have here. It's Always Summer Somewhere, which explores his life, how it relates to cricket, so much more than that. Thanks so much for joining us, Felix White. Felix, how are you?
Ben, total pleasure, man. Yeah, thank you very much for having me. Yeah, we've been meaning to do this for a little while, haven't we? Like for maybe 6 months or something, you got in touch. So I'm really glad finally we can do it.
Yeah, no, thanks so much for making the time for it. I was hoping to have a conversation with you, and this has worked out great with the timing. I thought we'd start with a book, actually. I don't know if you want to just talk a little bit about kind of what drove you to write it, how you enjoyed the experience of that process, and yeah, maybe just a little bit of what that whole thing was like.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So, I'd never envisaged writing a book like this ever in my life. It was something that just come about a bit randomly because, as you mentioned, I was in a band for a long time and I'm completely in love with cricket, obsessed with cricket, which feeds into baseball, but we'll get into that later. When my band broke up, I ended up starting Tailenders with Jimmy, who for people, I don't know who the baseball equivalent of Jimmy Anderson would be, but it'd be like, Who's the pitcher for the Dodgers who's still not won a World Series, or maybe did recently?
Oh, Kershaw, maybe. Yeah, that's not bad.
Yeah, maybe Jimmy's like Clayton Kershaw. He's that kind of dude. Like so for baseball listeners that don't know, have reference for Jimmy. Anyway, so I've been doing this podcast with Jimmy, and I ended up ghostwriting his book a few years ago. And then the publishers were just like, maybe, you know, you want to write a cricket book. And so I came up with this idea pretty on the bounce that I could write a memoir, but through cricketing my life and cricketing moments. So the entire book is about how I've always been terrible at cricket, but I've always been more in love with it than anyone I know. So it's about how the game has articulated my life back to me, whether it be like through failure on the pitch or through like watching the England cricket team. And then it sort of go, and then as I got into that process, it got really, it became at first I thought it was gonna be quite flippant. I thought it was gonna be like High Fidelity or something, but a cricketing version. But it's ended up being like about my mum dying and about how we process loss and about the Maccabees and the adventures of being in that band for like 15 years. So it ended up being like a pretty full-on process, but actually when I was writing it, I was thinking to myself, if this was about baseball, would I still be able to read it? Because I had that in my head that I didn't want it to be too loaded of stuff that was like too cricket centric to like alienate people. So I did because I've read quite a few, even though I don't like know, I mean, yeah, I'm not a completely avid like paying attention to baseball every week, but I've read a few baseball books and stuff, and I was like interested by that idea that you could like, but I could still read it like Roger Kahn's book or whatever, where like it was enough about the human experience that it didn't like isolate you, if that makes any sense.
It does, yeah. No, I think it'd be good to chat later actually about like the cricket and baseball links and stuff like that, because I think there's stuff in there. But no, I think, as you say, like the themes throughout the book, it resonated with me a little bit, just the way that like sport weaves itself into your life and like the experiences you have and the stuff that sticks in your memory. I found myself laughing along a little bit as we went through it. So it was good to get you on at this time to talk about it. And I think actually we'll probably be releasing this podcast at the start of August, I think right around when the book will come out, so it should be available for listeners to check out if they want to. As I say, strongly recommend it. You mentioned obviously Tailenders and how that started about 3 or 4 years ago, was it now? I was just kind of interested in what like the origin story was behind that, and obviously it's grown quite a bit into sort of the beast it is today, and if you ever expected that to happen and what the process has been behind that. For us, our little podcast keeps us entertained, but for you, like, that's become a real like massive part of your lives now, I feel like.
Yeah, it has. It's like actually most things in my life, it was like something that was started without any idea of that, and then just sort of like ended up snowballing into this thing. And the way Tailenders started was I had done, so I, towards the end of the Maccabees, like obviously like when you got like label and press people, especially these days, they're like, what are your other interests, we can do, you know, other stuff. So we ended up being like, quite reluctantly at first, I was like, well, I do love cricket. And they're like, well, you should do some cricket things. So I ended up doing, I think at first I felt like it was really uncool. But I was like, okay, let's do, okay, we'll do cricket stuff. So I did some stuff with like BBC or whatever about being a musician in love of cricket. And one of those things took me to a show that Jimmy Anderson did with Greg James, who's the Radio 1 breakfast show host. So I went on that show, met Jimmy and Graham Swan, who I was completely in awe of. And I bumbled my way through like half an hour of like interview with them. But we kind of vaguely kept in touch. And I think what happened was when the Maccabees broke up, Greg thought maybe even like an olive branch to me. Like, I think he knew I was going to have quite a lot of time on my hands. And he was like, he just thought, oh, that would be quite cool. Why don't we just try and do this thing? Me, you and Jimmy, we'll do a BBC podcast. He happened to bump into like the boss of BBC in the lift and said, just like out, off the top of his head, pitched to him, me, Felix White from the Maccabees and Jimmy Anderson, you know, like Alan Partridge, give us a second series. So he was like, so he gave it anyway. So we did like one series of Tailenders, which was just supposed to be Jimmy in Australia, us asking cricket questions. We were just supposed to do six episodes of it. And in the second or third episode, a guy from Bristol phoned us up called Matt, who claimed to be, you might know the story, I don't know, but who claimed to be distantly, he said he hated cricket, didn't know anything about it, but he was distantly related to Sachin Tendulkar, who's like one of the greatest cricketers ever lived from India. And so the podcast ended up becoming this sort of like detective exploration on like, is Matt, we call him now Matching Tendulkar, is he related to Sachin Tendulkar? But it just turns out that Matching is a very inquisitive and entertaining guy. So he comes up with quizzes and asks Jimmy questions about cricket every week. And it's been like, and now it's been, and then it just, that just sent it off into some weird tangent where it's like not even about cricket anymore. It's quite like left field, sometimes that comedy show, which no one intended it to be. And that's what we've been doing for 3 years. It's definitely not what I thought I was going to be doing 3 years ago, but it's been great, really great.
No, yeah, I started listening at, I think around the 2019 Ashes, I got like really back into cricket around then, and right. A friend had recommended it, stumbled onto it. But I think, yeah, certainly like for me, some of the most enjoyable part of it has been like, yeah, Matching, kind of getting into the sport and being able to go through that journey with him. And I don't know, there's something special about like the childlike wonder of the sport. And I, the same thing happens with baseball friends I have who start getting into it, and kind of the questions that they ask are just perfect sometimes. So
exactly,
I thought, yeah, well let's talk a bit about baseball. I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about how you first stumbled across the sport and what kind of an impression it left on you originally and where it's gone from there.
Yeah, sure. So I growing up, I've always been in love with sports. So like football and baseball, and I was football and cricket, and watched anything like darts, golf, you know, like anything that's on, I'll be locked in and be quite emotionally moved by it, like an hour in, like as a lot of people are. But American sport in particular, I'd always like, you get fed this assumption when you're growing up that but there's somehow it's like dumbed down, or that baseball's basically rounders. You get kind of told it quite a lot. So I'd always sort of dismissed growing up, even into my late teens, American sport as like not detailed enough or something. Like, you know, we get sort of told it a little bit. But Maccabees ended up going on tour quite a lot, obviously, and we went to America quite a few times. And on the second or third tour, I decided that I wasn't going to drink alcohol on the tour, which was quite a challenge at the time, because that's how you used to like get like rid of the nerves for gigs and like generally kill time. And on the first night of the tour, I was just flicking through the hotel room TV, and baseball was on about six times on all those American channels. So I ended up watching loads of baseball. And the first thing that I was really like struck by is how beautiful it looked. Like under under floodlights at night, like the way the light would like bounce off even batters' helmets or whatever it is, and just even the shape of the pitch and just how like perfect it seemed. Like the clothes would have, like, I've never seen. There's never been any better sports clothes ever invented than baseball, what they wear. And so I was just sort of like, wow, this is kind of like beautiful and very, it felt very romantic. And then as the tour progressed, I kind of was like, every time we got anywhere, baseball was in a bar. I wasn't drinking, so I was going to sit and watch the baseball. I was in a hotel. And then like I ended up like asking people about it, like, what's going on here, da 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 da. And like slowly they're explaining it to me, and then a cab driver would be saying stuff like, yeah, I was good at, you know, I wasn't good at hitting it, but I was good at getting hit, which meant I could walk to first base, or like all that stuff. And then I started like picking it up, and then it took, by the end of this like 3 week month tour, I was like stopping off at like little league games if I saw them.
Really?
And like watching kids play and their dad going, it's a curve, like that, or like whispering in their son's ears and all that. Watching, I was thinking, this is the fucking best game ever created. And that was right in the, sorry, tell me if I'm talking too much, but that was and that was right in the middle of, I think it was 2015, and it was right in the middle of the Mets. Mets got to the World Series that year. Yeah. And I decided I was a Mets fan because we ended up in New York, and I had gone to see the Mets the last tour, and I bought all the kit or something. And the Mets had articulated to me somehow, because I support Fulham Football Club.
Right.
And I felt a similar fit, like there's a real sense with that. Tell me if I'm wrong, but it was a real sense of like, they lose a lot. There's a lot of like eye rolling. There's a lot of tragedy. There's a lot of like, even if it's going well, this is going to go wrong at some point. Like that's really stitched in, felt like that was stitched into like everyone's thing. And I felt like, oh, this is a bit of me. So but during that tour, Mets were doing amazing. And they had all those players like Curtis Granderson. I don't know if he still plays for them. Cespedes.
Yeah.
And they were all like really, they were really like cartoonish, like Boyzone, like, not Boyzone the pop band, but like Boyzone the upcoming. They were like sort of like, if you couldn't imagine better heroes, if you could like create them. And then also had this guy Bartolo Colon,
yeah,
he was like
Colon,
and he obviously massive guy pitching. And then all these things started to click in my head, like baseball, like cricket, all different shapes and sizes and make it work for them in whatever different way. It's that individual, there's so much pressure on the individual, but it's a team game and so many games within a game and all that kind of thing. And anyway, at the end of our tour, I ended up wangling tickets to go to the playoffs before the World Series when a Mets, I can't remember who they beat, but they like beat someone 8-2, and it was like, it's like euphoria in there. And I just remember thinking that I'm just so, so, so in love with this game. And I ended up watching the World Series against Kansas City through the night when I got back home from tour, and being completely heartbroken when they were sorry, man, my language about it is going to be really vague, but they were winning some game, and in the ninth inning, a dude had been pitching the whole way through.
Matt Harvey, right?
Matt Harvey.
Like, pitching the whole game, yeah.
So dramatic. And they should have taken him out. And then he ends up getting put back in. And then he ends up giving away runs. And Familia, like, gets thrown in right at the deep end. And then there's a miss throw at the bait, like a base that they go through at. I remember, and then when I watched that, I was like, it was exactly the same feeling of watching England lose at cricket when I was like a 10-year-old, watching England, Gary Lineker get substituted in 1992, all those like feelings of like heartbreak and like, what, can no one change that? Is that just what's happened?
That's just happened, yeah.
Yeah, so, so I was just completely in love with it. And then from that point, I just did all the stuff. I read Boys of Summer and, what's that guy? Zach Hampel. He's got a book called Watching Baseball Smarter, which is I've read that from front to back.
Brilliant.
And I watched Field of Dreams, Kevin Costner. Oh, yeah. And then I was just like, this game, man, is... And so still now, like, through the night, but I've sort of lost touch a bit in terms of what's going on. But sometimes through the night, if there's if I can't sleep, I'll just put it on ESPN in the background on my laptop, and it helps me just even sleep. Yeah.
I like that. That's a great story. I'm glad you went on there, because I think you touched on so much, but like the romanticism side of baseball is massive. And I think the Mets are like the romantic team of baseball almost. I have a real soft spot for them. I'm like a fan of the Rockies, thanks to a terrible decision that I made 10 years ago that I'm too brave to go back on now. But yeah. I've always had a soft spot for them for the reasons that you said. They're like almost not quite the lovable losers, but like they're the smaller team in that city, and they've always had that kind of, they always feel like they're a moment away from disaster. And when everything looks like it's going great, it's actually when they're about to, you know, suffer the most devastating blow. But that season, that 2015 season you mentioned, was obviously such a special one for them. And there's such like a cast of misfits, as you said, that were kind of part of their team. And they were like, yes. I remember in the World Series, yes. like David Wright came back, right? And he literally nicknamed David Captain Wright. America. And he like hit a home run. Yeah, and I remember seeing like City Field just bouncing. And like, yeah, there is something special, I think, about that team. I'll get some sticks.
I think I was there at that one when David Wright hit.
Really?
I'm glad that but that's what happened with Mets. And just quickly, can I just ask you a question? Did the Mets inherit all the like Brooklyn Dodgers fans? Is that the thing with the Mets? Did they like when the Dodgers went to LA?
Yeah, so I think so. I think that was part of the reason the Mets were set up, was because New York, I think they had three teams for a while with the Yankees, the Dodgers and the Giants. And then two of them obviously moved out to the West Coast. And then the Mets kind of became the second team. So I think they did inherit a lot of those Brooklyn Dodgers fans. Yeah.
Sure. Okay. Got you. I'm glad I'm sort of picked that up then correctly, but that was sort of what the feeling about that club was. And then I've noticed since that like Seinfeld supports the Mets, doesn't he? And that kind of thing. And that sort of suit, because the Yankees are like Manchester United, basically, aren't they?
Exactly.
We don't want the Yankees to win.
No, exactly. Well, but that's part of it, is that they've always been the kind of smaller team in that city. But no, it's great. And I noticed you said last year that you maybe have a lockdown or before then, you've been going back and rewatching the 1986 World Series. How did you enjoy that experience?
Oh, mate. Mate, yeah, so okay, I'm glad you brought that up, because I was, so when the lockdown happened, I felt like I was like we all did a little bit, felt like I needed something that was comforting but also something that was new. So I decided all my brain decided it wanted to do was just watch baseball. So I went I watched the entire 1988, because it's all on YouTube, man, all the series, the games from the World Series from like all time. It's amazing. But I watched the entire 1986 World Series, which is, that's Daryl Strawberry and Dwight Gooden, isn't it? Yeah, against Boston Red Sox. Yeah. And I got heavily invested every night at a different game watching that. And that's the same feeling, man. When Bill Buckner spills that ball, I had to watch that like 27 times again and again just to check that actually happened. And the first thing that happened in my head, I actually feel like I'm almost going to cry thinking about that, about how that must feel, because I tweeted out after I'd seen it, because I actually needed to know, was he all right after that? Because I don't think I've ever seen anything more dramatic in a sporting sense than that in my whole life, and the humiliation and the failure of like, that happening to you. Tell me that he was all right, wasn't he?
He was, yeah. I mean, it's a shame, because obviously that's what he's best known for now, and if you say the name Bill Buckner, everyone thinks of the ball just dribbling through his legs. But he was actually a great player for the Red Sox, and obviously fortunately they've come back to kind of have their day in the sun. But I mean, as far as heartbreaking moments in sport go, and the everything with it, the commentary from who was it, Vin Scully, and like, obviously wasn't alive to experience it, but watching it back, and you just, as you say, your heart skips a beat when it happens.
I've definitely felt all of that, and that's what struck me as a really heartbreaking thing about baseball, is that you can have someone who's been the top of their game, top of their profession, like excelled at everything, but they're just stuck in the limelight at that moment. And then they're remembered for something else. Like it happens in cricket and as well quite a lot. And it's not, that's not dissimilar actually to, hopefully this won't be the same as those England footballers because they'll have redemption in their careers. But it's the same thing. Like, but the injustice in that is so deep. But it's like, but I just really felt like, honestly, still recalling that, that was traumatising seeing him drop pump level. And also, because there's a guy pitching, I had to check if he was all right as well. I can't remember who it was, but the look on the guy's face who was pitching, that's sending shivers through my spine.
I'm glad. Well, I'm not glad you brought it up because I feel like it's opening up old wounds. But I'm glad you brought up the kind of connection with cricket in terms of, like, in my mind, obviously team sports where there's plenty of players on the pitch all contributing in their different ways. But like there's that real like gladiatorial element of like pitcher versus hitter in baseball and bowler versus batsman in cricket that I felt like you don't necessarily get in many other team sports, in that like everyone's eyes are on that exact person at that moment. And like I think it's interesting, like as you say, the team result is ultimately what matters, but the individual performances become like they're so important in themselves. And I feel like that's quite unique to those two sports, in that like, yeah, as you say, you can be a hero or a villain in like a matter of moments. And
yeah, I think you're totally right, man. And I actually, Ed Smith, do you know a guy called Ed Smith?
The selector.
Yeah, yeah. So he wrote a book about cricket and baseball. Have you read that? It's called Playing
Hard. No, I've not.
Right, okay. So before, when he was a player at Kent, I think, he went on holiday with his girlfriend or whatever and had a similar experience to me where he fell in love with baseball.
Okay.
And he ended up writing a book, which I really recommend, which he sort of goes into about how he's fell in love with the game, but then goes into all the similarities between baseball and cricket. It's a very, very cool book, but he's... And it goes into stuff... Or does it go into... I've read it somewhere else, but anyway... I really love the fact that the reaction time to a pitch as well as a fastest bowler in cricket is exactly the same. And they worked out that that's actually, that's the height of human response time is that amount of time. So the fastest pitcher with the fastest cricket bowler, a human is at their absolute limit to respond when it's at that rate. And I really like how these games from the other side of the world have somehow worked that out. But that's at the actual like limit in terms of response, you know. And loads of stuff as well that I hadn't realised until I had that tour where, because to the untrained eye, it just looks like they're swinging at the ball and hitting it occasionally.
Yeah.
But the judgment of leaving them go, like, and all that kind of thing is just magic. And actually, answer me this. So the ref, the umpire, he just decides where the plate is and that's where it is.
Basically, yeah. There's meant to be a rule book strike zone, but the judgment is all in the hands of the umpire. So they have to decide as they watch the pitch whether it's the ball or strike, at least for the time being. There are rumours of robot umpires being brought in to basically decide
really?
For them using technology. But at the moment, it's still left in the hands of umpires, yeah.
It's so brilliantly insane that it's like having stumps but aren't in the ground as going, that would have got you out. But I love the like the judgment. It's amazing, but it's just still in the hands of that person. But I love that kind of thing, that arguing over like that was inside or outside the. Is it the plate? Yeah, is it the plate? Am I talking about the right thing?
Yeah, the strike zone, the plate. Yeah, but there's almost that element. Yeah, like you say, like all these incredible athletes doing their thing. And I suppose a little bit like in cricket when like a bowler goes up to appeal and everyone's eyes turn to this bloke stood there in like a white jacket who either lifts his finger or doesn't. And that's like the most critical moment. It's a bit like that in baseball, I suppose, with each pitch, like suddenly the attention all goes to this one man crouched behind the catcher who has to decide ball or strike. It's crazy.
Yeah, incredible. Can I ask you quick, like just brought out there, sorry, I'm going to end up asking you those questions. is that happening in baseball where you have, because you can really feel that the romanticism and the tradition, with cricket anyway, rubs off against the new technology, and they're real, like, they're really like fighting with each other. Is that happening in baseball? Is like technology starting to change a game and people are unhappy about that, or is it not?
There's definitely a degree of that, yeah. As obviously technology is improving, it's not only changing the way that the game is like run in terms of rules. There's obviously now that like plays will go to video review afterwards, which I think we all consider quite a good thing. There's talk of like the strike zone being automated, which some people hate, some people love. But there's also in the way that like player development has changed now, like because we have so much data available to us in terms of what makes a good pitch, what makes a good swing, how you know produce the most energy from your body, the way that kids, I suppose, even now are being brought up and learning the sport is so different to how it was 20 years ago. And I think that's why you see now so many guys who are able to pitch 100 miles an hour, so many more than they used to be. And likewise, like the ability of the hitters now, certainly at the top of the game, it's just like a different game almost to what it was 100 years ago because of the advances we've had technologically. And I think there are a lot of people who yearn for a different sport when there maybe there were like more balls in play, less home runs and strikeouts, more stolen bases, all that kind of stuff that's kind of been phased out of the game a little bit lately. But at the same time, I think there's an appreciation that the athletes we witness now are the greatest to ever have lived, and that these guys are just on another level in terms of their ability. So it's like, it's a balancing act, I guess. And it's similar in cricket, I suppose, right?
I was going to say that's really interesting because it's very similar to in cricket where people hitting more sixes out of the ground, batters are capable of doing that way more often. And there is that argument with people that watch the game for a long time that the nuance is getting like squeezed out of the game a little bit, like you say, like stealing bases and all that kind of thing, which you can kind of see. I veer back and forth from it. Does baseball still have that thing? Because one of the things that I feel is a shame with cricket is that you have, in the past, you'd have had tail end batters who literally, in the 90s, literally could not bat. And that was always like the spectacle, the great spectacle of cricket, I thought, was like watching the highest elite sport and someone walk out that is so ill-prepared to do what they're supposed to do. And is that the same? Are the pitchers like better at hitting now than they ever have been and that kind of thing as well?
So, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because, again, that's one of the ongoing like debates that rage is whether pitchers should be allowed to hit. And there's rumours that as of probably next season, they will no longer be hitting. They'll be a designated hitter in the National League as well as the American League. And so a lot of people agree with you. And actually, they see pitchers hitting as one of those really nice quirks of the game. And I'm sure you remember Bartolo Colon's home run like 4 or so years ago now, which was just like one of the most crazy moments in the history of the game. And like, again, I think people argue, certainly I would, that like, almost as you said, like we shouldn't be watching a sport at this level where guys literally are basically unable to do the most basic functional job. So maybe we should have the designated hitters in there because, you know, you don't want your top level athletes to be looking like me trying to hit a baseball.
Sure.
But as you say, there are those also who just see that as one of those crazy quirks of the game that should be preserved. And for those 1 in 1,000 moments where someone like Colon hits a home run, kind of makes it all worth it. And I'm guessing that's where you sit on that argument.
Definitely. And then so the pitchers quite often, right, they're bunting it. Yeah, that's quite often what's going on. Yeah. I think I don't have the authority to say this, but I really don't think we should get rid of that. Because that's what the game is, man. Like that's the balance of your team as well, and like working out how all that works. But let me ask you another fastest asking you lots of questions.
Yeah, I like it.
So when you in your lineup, like the bat as in the order, batting order, is it always set so like centre field goes first, left field, or is it do you completely work out your order however you like, and can the pitcher be a bit higher up, or is it always the best to the worst and then repeat, or is there like a because in so cricket obviously like, you have like the more in test cricket the more defensive batters will open and then aggressive ones later and that kind of thing.
Similar, like there's kind of theories basically in what the optimal lineup setting should be in baseball, but generally it's viewed that you want to get your better batters higher up in the lineup. I think traditionally speaking, you'd have had your best hitter maybe third and your like power hitter fourth. They call it the cleanup spot. In theory, they'll have the most chances to hit when runners are on base. But I think nowadays it's usually like yeah, there's the 2, 3, 4 spots where you put your best hitters. And then further down the lineup will be more of your like specialist fielders who can hit a bit. And the pitcher almost always goes at the very bottom of the lineup. But I don't know how, if you've been following at all this season, but Shohei Ohtani at the Los Angeles Angels, who's this two-way phenomenon. They're calling him kind of like the modern day Babe Ruth. He can not pitch at the top level, but he is in his own right, like an unbelievable hitter. I think he leads the league in home runs as of this recording. He's an all-rounder, which obviously in cricket is fairly common, but in baseball it's almost unheard of. Like Babe Ruth was around, what, like 120 years ago when the game was completely different. Wow. So he is kind of changing the perception of baseball players a little bit. And I think like what he's able to do is insane. But I suppose in cricket, all-rounders are more prevalent.
So was he in the All-Star game recently? I was hearing about
that. He was,
that. Yeah. And he's absolutely tearing it up. Yeah, I love that.
He is, yeah. So I think, you know, for pitchers... And certainly, I think to the point you kind of raised earlier, generally speaking, the level of hitting has got better for them, which is good. I think there's just an awareness now that you can't afford to have an automatic out at the bottom of the lineup, a bit like in cricket now, your tail enders have to be able to hold the bat a little bit at least, or, you know, otherwise it's just going to let the team down at some point.
So a pitcher won't get picked if they can't hit at all anymore, really.
They'll probably still get picked, but I think they work a lot more on drills, at least to get good bunts down, make contact. And occasionally, yeah, you'll get guys who actually are handy batters too, which makes a big difference. But yeah, it's always funny seeing a guy get in there who just looks like me trying to hit.
I love it. Joe, I always think as well, cricket, I always wonder why cricket batters, especially in shorter formats, don't warm up with the things like the weights around their bats. So when they get out, it feels lighter. Feel like that would be a really good idea. I always think that because that's what they do, and they do it with weights. So when they get out there, do they just feel like superhumans with the weight of their?
Yeah, they do. They have those little rings that go on the bat, and they kind of swing those to practice. I do.
Yeah, yeah.
I wonder if anything like that. I guess it doesn't exist in cricket. You don't really see anyone using them, do you?
No, but also fascinatingly, you do see like the odd, because you always think like the biggest, like the best hand-eye coordination strikers of the ball in cricket, like Jos Buttler or whatever, would just be amazing baseball hitters. But I saw a video of Jos trying to do it with someone else, and like he clearly like couldn't do it that well. Like, it's amazing how similar but how different the disciplines actually are.
Yeah, it's interesting because I don't know that's what you're referring to, but a few years ago, MLB did like a home run derby event at Hyde Park, I think that's what it was. And Buttler and I think Alex Hales took part as well and kind of gave
exactly
it a go.
That.
Yeah, and it was interesting seeing, obviously they've got the hand-eye coordination to hit the ball, but I guess just the mechanics of swinging are very different. And I had a chat as well with Benny Howe, the Gloucestershire all-rounder. I don't know if you heard of him.
But, all right.
He's well into his baseball, loves it. And he was kind of talking about how watching it has influenced the way that he plays and like how he bowls, he changes speeds. He became like a bit of a T20 specialist. He changes speeds a lot more because he sees the way that like pitchers do that. And he uses like knuckleballs almost in the way that he bowls. And I think the two are maybe getting a bit closer together, as you say, with like sixes now becoming much more important in the shorter formats of the game. I think the way that baseball players use their bodies to generate power is starting to seep into cricket a little bit, which is interesting.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder if there'll ever be, because that's maybe think of Gavin Hastings, was it? The rugby player that ended up kicking in American football. Just at some point, there must be that must happen one day where someone crosses sports. I think it'd probably have to be cricket to baseball, but I don't know.
Yeah, there's enough of like certainly skill elements that would cross over well that you would think the top players could give it a go.
Yeah, yeah. Love it. I could be asking you questions now for like literally next few hours.
We'll have to get you back on sometime. We'll do the Felix and Ben podcast.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about the two sports in terms of like the way that we consume them. I think one of the parallels that I always draw between them is the way that like certainly, I mean, Test match cricket's a different beast because it's 5 days rather than 3 hours, but like the way that the sports have long periods of kind of nothing happening or not much happening and kind of build up into like moments of tension and crescendos. If you view the two very similar in that pattern, and also one of my favorite things to do with baseball is to consume it via radio. And I think it's a really great sport for that and kind of the general tone. And actually, like, I find it helps me go to sleep sometimes, which maybe isn't a ringing endorsement, but I just love having it like in my ears at that moment. And I feel the same way about cricket. And obviously Test Match Special has such a special place in people's hearts. And I feel like there's room for that in baseball too. I don't know if it's quite the same in America as it is here.
100%. And I think, yeah, to your first point or question, I think that's the thing that I really enjoyed about going to the first few baseball games that I did at Mets or whatever, is that you get that set. Like, and I don't think this is maybe not great for the future of either games, not the way we sell it, but you get that sense that even the people that are most in love with it or playing it are bored of it as well. And like, I kind of like everyone sort of rolling their eyes at it. And I really love that. And then, but that thing of, as you say, like even watching really sort of slack analogy might be like, you watch an amazing film and you don't realize the tensions happen in the first hour until the second hour when you're like, oh, that's what the story is. And I wouldn't feel this if it wasn't for that moment. Yeah. That's what both those games are really fantastic at. But I love that kind of like love-hate relationship that clearly everybody has with their game, where like you kind of I definitely have noticed with a lot of, I don't think it'll be this, I think baseball is probably cooler in America than cricket is in England, but you definitely get that impression sometimes with cricketers in England that they're a bit reticent to tell you, oh yeah, cricket, nah, I don't worry about cricket, I don't like it that much actually. Even though they spend every single day of their lives doing it. I guess, and I have heard people say that baseball's boring in the same way, so I guess they both suffer from that. But what you're saying with radio, that's, I'm so glad you brought that up, because I was asking the other, well, about a year ago on Twitter, does Test Match Special exist for baseball? We're looking for that, but because it's so regional, there isn't one, right, that's like catch-all, or is
no,
it?
No, I don't think there is.
Right, okay. Because I was looking to feed this like baseball fascination. I listened to Buster Olney's podcast, which I really like. But sometimes it's analysis after the fact, and it's very detailed as well. So sometimes I've got literally no idea at all. And it's like you say, I'm quite want to hear, because that's the other thing. The language is so brilliant, and that's the same with cricket, where you have like, well, I have friends that, or whatever, my girlfriend who doesn't like cricket, but they'll be kind of into the psychedelic nature of what's going on, and they have no reference for he sweeps it to the leg side down to fine leg and there'll only be one run. Like, there's literally no, you can't, somebody has no reference for that. That is literally like someone who's just sort of made up, like a
just words, pass. Yeah.
And then the baseball, you have that too, like line down to left field and it's a one run game or whatever the stuff they say, that makes me like tingle how cool that is as language.
Almost like the old-fashioned Americana about listening to a baseball broadcast, that like you could be listening today in 2021, but you could also be listening like 50 years ago. And like the regional adverts that you get on some of those stations are just amazing. Like, I'm almost as fascinated with those as I am with the actual game itself. It's just a whole experience.
I haven't watched it yet, but I've been told about this drama about with a guy who's a baseball commentator. Have you heard about this?
I don't know. What, recently?
Yeah, well, Greg sent, I don't know when it was about, but Greg sent me an interview with him, and he does lots of voices in Simpsons. I think he might be Mr. Burns or something.
Right.
But it's a series where he's a baseball caller, commentator, okay, but he can't turn his baseball voice off in real life. So he's like constantly talking like that, even when like really sad things or whatever are happening in his life. I've really got to find that, man. I'll let you know I'll find out what that is.
Yeah, you should share it. That sounds very funny. Is it Hank Azaria is the guy?
Yeah, he does a lot of Simpsons voices.
Yeah, baseball.
That really rings a bell, yeah.
Yeah.
And so I'll be desperate to watch that, because it sounds like a great show.
Yeah, that does sound funny. It's such a good concept as well for something to do. It's funny you mentioned earlier about like the players. Obviously, I feel like it's very similar to cricket, but like the season and the sport just takes up so much of their life that I think you almost need that escape from it, don't you? And like, I think they all have to say that they're obsessed with it, but even one of the funny parts I find listening to Tailenders is just like, to Jimmy, it's just like his daily life, you know? And when we're all like marveling about what he's able to do and the records he breaks. And I think like, obviously for him, it's, I'm sure he has an appreciation of it, but like, that's just what he does. And he kind of almost sees it that way. I think there's like a fascinating thing in that. And I'm sure in baseball too, about these guys that are like superhuman to us, and to them, it's kind of like, it's just what I do. I'm just good at it.
Totally. I definitely get that sense, but I get that from Jimmy quite a lot, where you feel like, oh God, I've just projected all these feelings onto you and you're just literally just done your job. Like, you don't even remember that. So tell me about what's going through your mind when you, you know, no, just folding. You know, it's like, yeah. And you always realise that I've had that with quite a few cricketers where they genuinely don't remember all the things that you do about that moment and when this happened and all that kind of stuff. Like, it's just, they're just like, oh yeah, when was that again? You know.
Yeah. I suppose do you find that with like having been in a band and done gigs and tours, as you said, and like obviously it's not the exact same, but there's an element of like being the man in the middle, all eyes on. Is it almost like you're in a different zone when you're up there, and it is hard to kind of quantify what goes through your brain?
But the actual honest, I'd love to give you a cooler answer than this, but the actual honest answer for me was that I did feel it all. Like, because I'd been a fan of bands growing up and had watched bands and sort of dreamt it. When it was going on, I was never like, oh, I'm just doing my job. I was like, fucking hell, I can't believe how real that is. So, and it was for one of those reasons, I would spend days before and after gigs so drained, like really? So depleted, because I couldn't help but go through the experience of the gig of like 9 out of 10 times euphoria, and the time it's going wrong, like complete mortification or devastation, like when you feel like something's gone wrong or you haven't been good. And I would just go through that feeling again. It's probably why I'd be a terrible cricket or baseball player, because I couldn't disassociate my feelings from the moment. It's even like now while we're playing cricket, when I'm playing cricket at the lowest club level,
yeah,
if I get the ball to bowl and even like two people over there are watching it, I feel the pressure so intensely. I feel really like, oh, I can't do it. I feel it really like affects me in a really negative sense when people are like, are watching me do that. And I think that's partly actually, that's why people, not to assume what you're like, but people like us are fascinated in baseball and cricket, because it seems so superhuman to be able to absorb that pressure, to be able to compartmentalize it and then do something that incredibly well, like, you know, and make all those rational choices under that pressure is a fascinating thing that someone can do that. And it's, I could never, yeah, even in a band, I was complete emotional wreck all of the time.
In a way, like, it's going to sound really rude, but it's reassuring to hear that. Because as you say, like, you see these guys doing it and you just think they're so far away from what I could even think of getting to in my wildest dreams. But I suppose, look, yeah, that's why they're there.
Yeah, I think you find different, I don't know, like, I think in the musician sense, I think you do have different, even within my band, it was different. Like, some of the people in my band or whatever, or in other bands, hadn't necessarily dreamt of being in a band. They just had this skill that they happened to, like, stumble across, and then it happens. They didn't always have, or they don't always have context for what they're doing. But I had such clear, like, such a clear map of what happened to bands when you got successful, and how I'd imagined it being, and what venues you'd do, and what, like, you know, being in the enemy or on the radio. Yeah. I had such clear guidelines, but when you were inside it, I couldn't really sort of dissociate that it didn't mean anything to me. I was just doing my job. I was like, fucking let's go out and party now. This is mental. Yeah.
I can imagine, yeah. That's brilliant. I'd love to chat this more. Maybe we'll have to get you back on sometime, but I'm conscious of taking up too much of your time today. So I'm happy to leave it there. Maybe we'll do it again sometime. That'd be brilliant.
I feel like maybe I'm the matching for your podcast. So maybe I should come with some more baseball questions. I'll do some baseball. What's like point of the season we're in at the moment?
So the All-Star breaks just happened. So I think today is like the first day of the second half of the season, basically.
And how are the Mets doing? I thought we started quite well, apparently, didn't we? And we dropped.
They are doing well. Yeah, top of the National League East at the moment. So looking good for the postseason.
Fingers crossed. Great. Well, I'll try and watch, listen to some baseball, and I'll come back to you with some questions before the end of the season.
Yeah, let's chat Mets when they're doing well, before the inevitable heartbreak.
Let's go Mets.
Brilliant. Well, thanks so much. And yeah, for those who haven't listened to Tailenders, I strongly recommend it. I'm actually going to be going to see you guys live at the Hammersmith Apollo in October.
Oh, great.
So I'll be the one in the full, you know, Los Angeles Dodgers outfit. You'll be able to hit me a mile out.
Okay, yes, mate.
And likewise, the book, as I say, It's Always Summer Somewhere, brilliant read. Cricket, life, everything covered in it. So I do recommend you guys check it out. Felix, thanks so much for coming on and joining us.
Pleasure, mate. Thank you.